From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Welcome back. It is another show. I am going to fly solo on this one because I'm kind of in a rush. I'm Ryan Tracy, the founder of Rogue Analytics, and your host at RGR Football, as well as this show. And Chris and Seth are otherwise occupied today. I am kind of on a tight schedule. Just got finished with training camp, at least for me, for this season. It is late on Monday. I am heading for the airport, trying to get this thing recorded so that I can tell y'all what I saw. Couldn't get together with the guys, so it's just going to be me today. And I want to start by saying thank you to all the fans, all the listeners, all the subscribers that came up to me while I was at camp. There's way too many of you to mention, man. It was a great couple of days, and it's just not something that I can go through. But for everyone who shared a piece of their day with me, I really appreciate it. It was a good experience for me. I'm sure I told some of you I hadn't been to camp since a long, long time ago when they were in Wisconsin, River Falls. And it is something that was pretty reminiscent for me, but it was interesting to see how the Reed regime runs practice in person. I did end up getting some photos that worked out pretty well. You'll see those as we go through this change that we have kind of hinted at, but we're going to make it official. We are going to be working with Chiefs Digest, and the podcast will be available there. The videos will be available there. Chris and I and Reagan are all going to contribute to the site. Some of us more than others because it takes me forever to write, but that's why I do this. So just want you guys to know that it's not just that Matt Derrick will be on with us regularly. It's that we will be part of that site as well. And we're very excited about it. It's one of those things that with Trez Paylor gone and out of the market, we need new voices, and we're going to work together to try and bring you coverage that is better rounded than we've done in the past, that is more angles, just in a small, concise space. So we're working real hard to do that for you, and part of this trip to training camp was part of that. You know, it was a long weekend for me, and mentioning all these things as I go through and watch practice, I'm making mental notes, I'm making audio notes, I'm making all kinds of notes, and I do have to mention two people who happened to not just say hi, but hang out with me a little bit, in Sean Mitchum and Devin Albertson. And I'm sorry, they hung out just listening to me muttering under my breath about all of my little observations. So I appreciate the patience, and that was a good time. It was nice to see everybody out there. There's a lot going on at this camp, and it's something that as we went through the weekend, we saw some ups and downs, but a bit of progression in terms of attitude. Initially, they were coming off of an off day after that preseason game number one, and it was not exactly the best-paced practice I had seen in quite a while. There was a little bit of up and down. I didn't think everybody was quite into it as they should be, but that's part of being a professional athlete. There are days, especially when you're recovering from soreness from a game day, that it's hard to stay focused. And this is a young team, really, across the board. And I think that just proved to be a difficult thing that particular day. But then the next day, I saw the team take it up another notch. And I saw a number of nice plays. And this is, you know, probably my notes that you either heard the other day or saw on RGR or about to see, depending on when this is released and when the video is released. You know, some players that were stepping up and trying to make some plays, get themselves in a better position, not only to make the roster, but to be contributors. And that's important. And I thought that was a very good thing. The intensity in particular, all weekend long that I saw from Tonnell Pastineau, I thought was impressive. On the defensive side, one guy that I thought stood out was his determination at building his craft. You could see whether it was individual drills, you know, obviously three padded practices. I was only expecting two. I was very happy to see the third day that was still in pads. The day before military appreciation, which is probably today by the time you're listening to this, or was today by the time you were listening to this. You know, building up to that third day in pads, there was some pop, there was some aggression, there was a fight. I mean, we'll talk about that here in a little bit, but the general thought that I'm leaving with it, as I'm getting ready to leave town, is that this team took their lumps. didn't perform well and is starting to pick it up. I'm optimistic for what we're going to see in preseason game two, and hopefully the youngsters can get it together. And by preseason game three, I expect that once they're back and practicing in Kansas City at the facility and a little bit more hometown normal weekday functioning, I think that's going to be a positive thing for this team. If you need more about Tano in terms of film, go check out what Seth did over at The Athletic. That will give you some insight. But I think overall, he's a guy that stood out to me in a positive way. Another guy that stood out to me in a positive way over the course of the weekend, or the 3 days that I saw anyway, was Steven Nelson. A guy that is clearly a different player than he was a season ago or two seasons ago, where I thought he was functional, but not special, a guy that still had a ways to go. I saw him very, very aggressive this weekend in this little run-up. Saturday through Monday's practices, all the padded ones. He was intense. He was vocal on the sidelines. He was a positive influence and role model for the younger players at his position, hooping and hollering about the DBs when they made plays in team, even the seconds and thirds. He was into it, and I thought that was a very good sign to see someone take a vocal on the practice field leadership position. A little surprised that it ended up being Steven Nelson, because he's talked pretty extensively this preseason about how he's much more focused, he's more zen-like, and that he's taken up meditation, a much more focused individual. But that is a step outside for somebody for that to take on a vocal leadership role. It's one thing to lead by example. That is about being a professional. You can lead by example by simply being professional and taking care of your business. Taking a vocal leadership position is something completely different. That's mentoring. That's trying to not only hold up your end of the bargain and your assignments on the field, but helping others take care of theirs. And that's a different step. And it's something that, for a guy like Steven Nelson that's in the contract year, that's an interesting twist to see right now, too. And there's a lot of young players, particularly at what's going on at safety. We're going to talk about that after the break. It's important to have someone like that in the room day after day, not just on the field, but when you're watching film, when you're going over install, all these aspects, a leadership, a vocal leadership of someone in the room has to be there. And I like what we've seen from Kendall Fuller. Evidently, he's a little more vocal behind the scenes, not somebody that I've seen yelling at practice or anything yet, but Steven Nelson definitely is. Chris Jones, anyone who's been to camp, the fact that he greets everyone in the front row along that fence is nice to see every day. But on Monday in particular, as the tension in camp rose, I saw him take on a vocal thing as well. Spurring on the D-line from when he was out, the threes in particular got a lot of noise from Chris Jones, and I thought that was great to see. We should talk about what else happened with Chris Jones and why it happened. So let's take a quick second. We'll do that here. Now, what we saw from Chris Jones was, again, vocal leadership, but he also was pretty intense about it, and we saw that on the field as well. Got in a scrap with Andrew Wiley. And, from when I reviewed what I had in terms of photos, it seems like Chris had a reason to be upset. That's all. I'm going to leave it at that. But I think the contact actually came from another player. Shane Kizer of the Star, who's taken over for Dave Hewlett, seems to have gotten a shot that it was actually the collision, I believe, with Jelani Jenkinson. It looked like it was a block in the back. So, hey, play to the whistle and all that. But I like both sides. I like seeing it get scrappy in practice from the defensive point. And honestly, an O-lineman, especially a guy new to the roster and everything, to come out and be that aggressive, that's great. I think it's something that can feed into what they're doing and what they need on the offensive line, as it is, probably the biggest need on this roster right now, that and the safety position. We will talk about that as well, but the injury to Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is important because of his his glue. We saw what happened when he went out last season. We saw what happens when that line doesn't have him as the, you know, the aggressive, nasty guy that they need. They are a lot of finesse players. And so what Wiley's been able to do on the last day of practice, I'm finishing this up as it's being edited. I couldn't get it all done before I got on the plane, so finishing it up. And Reed had comments to close camp the next day. And even though it was downpouring, they still got a little bit of work in. And he said that he was one of the surprises, a pleasant surprise, I believe is the way he phrased it, in this camp, that it's come along enough. And they do still have that same mentality that if somebody comes down or goes down, the guy who comes in, he's got to play the role. He's got to get the job done. It's not about necessarily who's the starter and who's the backup. It's you're the guy who's taking this snap. You need to win this snap. And that's the way they have to go about it in order to be competitive, in order to be the team that can support the young quarterback who is the key long term to taking the next step and getting farther down the road towards the Super Bowl. And make no mistake, in the future of this franchise is a Super Bowl run. That is what everyone is focused on. They have to be. I understand those people that say, you know, teams should set achievable goals. And that's true. It's probably difficult for the Cleveland Browns to say our goal is the Super Bowl. And if they do, I can't assume that they all mean it, to tell you the truth. But regardless of that fact, they need to do it. Everyone needs to do it. And part of it is this team in particular has been a playoff team a couple of years under the Reed regime, broke that streak of a playoff win. And yes, last season was very disappointing. They should have had another playoff win right there. They should have gone on. I think they could have competed with other teams in the playoffs and gone farther than they did. And that's something to be overcome. But they are close. This is not a team that drafted a guy at number 10 because they were the 22nd team in the NFL. No. This is a playoff team. They got younger and stronger at quarterback, and they have to continue to support him. So having that piece and a guy that can step in at right guard while LDT is out, and no one knows how long he's going to be out. The concussion protocol is iffy that way. It's so individualized. Putting a timeline on is very, very difficult. I will say that I have some shots of him while he was in the tent. Did not seem to show a lot of the signs that you see from some of the more dramatic concussive blows. I'm not going to go into the details because I'm not a physician. I'm familiar with it just from a sports medicine and training perspective, but I am no expert. The good part is that we will get updates. They're going to play this game without him, the second game of the preseason, get a long look at Andrew Wiley as well as a number of other backup linemen, and then we'll see what happens getting ready for game three. Game three is the pinnacle of this preseason, and what they do is what they do. So we will see who emerges at that point. The other injury we have to talk about, and I know this is probably a sore subject for a lot of folks, but it is officially time where we have to think about what this season could look like if Eric Berry has a delay. And I'm not saying that he's injured. I know nothing. I'm just saying when you miss multiple practices in a row, you're talking about heel soreness, which is very similar, if not identical, to what we heard last season before game one where he injured the Achilles. Coach Reed did say that they obviously weren't aware of it at the time, and now they have more information and they know the expectation that they can deal with it. It may not be the same type symptoms, but it's still something that they can go on, they can kind of prepare for, and that's obviously why they're backing off of him. Try to give him some rest, see what they can do treatment-wise. It's a very iffy situation with an Achilles. If there's some kind of structural instability, it's very hard to see and find, but we'll see if they come up with something. But if they're able to rehab it, likely, if it's just tension in the muscle that's putting extra stress on the tendon, maybe there's something they can do and get him ready. Clearly, Eric's not missing anything right now. He can miss the rest of the preseason. And as long as he's physically in good shape, he's fine to start week one. That's not a problem with Eric Berry. They just have to be cautious because they need him. If if there were something to happen where he's not available for even, you know, the first quarter of the season, when you're talking about the Steelers and you're talking about the Chargers, and this is something that is quickly becoming an eye that they have to keep on what this team's going to look like at the safety position if he's out. And that includes a lot of Eric Murray and a lot of the rookie Watts. And Watts has been practicing his rear off. I saw him run with every single level over the last weekend of camp. He got some snaps with the ones, ran a ton with the twos, and got snaps with the threes as well. We saw him play almost the entire game week one of preseason. We'll see what happens in preseason game number two, but I would expect a lot of the same. They're trying to work him up fast. And that tells me that there's a little bit of concern. When you lose, whether I agreed with it or not, when you lose what the Chiefs considered their top two safeties for any amount of time, Dan Sorensen obviously out for a while, and quite honestly, the nature of that injury, it might be quite a while. But if you were to lose Eric Berry, even for a couple of games, especially the way this season schedule is going to start, that's a significant issue. They got to get those two guys in particular tuned up and ready to see what's going on. Leon McQuay took some snaps this last weekend as well with the ones. Once he got back on the field, and that seems far-fetched to me. I didn't see him play poorly in the snaps that he was in. I didn't see him make any kind of difference either. So that's a significant question. But the coaching staff, at least Coach Reed publicly, seems to think that he's a viable option to play some snaps at that position. Definitely would be more of a free type safety, as would Watts. So that means that you're talking about in the nickel set. And I did see this also quite a bit when they went to the smaller nickel. Saw a lot of Dorian Daniel in there doing what Dan Sorensen used to do in that light nickel linebacker role. I actually don't have a problem with that. I think Dorian Daniel can handle that. He's a little bit bigger in terms of heft. I think he's a better coverage guy. I think they'll be okay. They're going to get run at. And it's going to be up to the front guys, those D linemen, to protect Dorian Daniel if he has to play. But the other guy that's going to have to come up, probably play that second rover safety spot, is Eric Murray. And we've seen him do that. And we've seen him try to cover tight ends. And we've seen him have some struggles. Now, I got a lot of feedback, people telling me to relax, that nobody can cover Travis Kelce, even in practice. Well, I disagree. The more you know a player, if you are physically capable, the better you know the player, the guys that you practice with day after day, you should be able to do better. That's the way I see it. And I'm hoping that includes Eric Murray. We're going to find out, because he's going to get more reps against Travis Kelce, because that's the way they're going to have to use him. And if that is the case, then there's still maybe a pickup out there. There's still a cut-down day kind of pickup. I don't think the team's going to go for Eric Reed. That's just a gut feeling. I have nothing to back it up. I'm just saying. But look for a cut-down day kind of pickup at the safety position. And as I'm recording this, looks like we're getting a little bit of news. We're going to take another quick second, come back, and talk about the cornerbacks. Okay, so as I'm finishing this up, trying to get this out for you guys on Tuesday afternoon, it looks like the Chiefs are going to bring in Orlando Scandrick. And a lot of negative talk about him right off the bat, and for good reason. He struggled last season. Worst season of his career statistically. And quite honestly, has a reputation for stirring the pot and not being the best veteran presence in a locker room. I know our Reagan Cresswell, who's in Texas and familiar with the team, has a lot of negative things to say about it. His reputation as a teammate seems to not be that great. Chiefs are bringing him in, as of what I'm seeing right this minute. That's their plan. That is very, very telling to me that they feel they need veteran presence. We saw what happened. Don't take anything that happened in preseason game number one with Nelson and Amerson as anything in particular. But it tells me that they're still not quite comfortable with at least 4, 5, and 6. And that's going to be Smith, Springs, and it looks like DeMontre Wade from what I saw this last weekend. But let me tell you this. While Smith is super athletic and Springs has a lot of potential, and Wade seems to have learned to make some plays, and he's a little stickier in coverage than I've seen lately, at least to this point, those guys aren't ready. They go up against the number one offense. It's going to be rough. They're not ready to participate right now. And if they can sign a veteran, as long as he's not a problem in the locker room, that is like the baseline. He cannot cause disruption on this young team, especially with a young leader in Patrick Mahomes. But if they can do that, I think that's what they're going to try to do to get a little bit more experience at that corner group. Because if they have an injury right now to either Amerson, Fuller, or Nelson, they're in serious trouble at the corner position as well. So it's going to turn into a pick on the young kid thing as soon as any of those other three guys get in there. So keep that in mind. We'll see what happens, and we'll have more for you after that. But just want to get that out there and get that loose. I am not going to be on the show tomorrow. I have previous commitments that I'm going to have to take care of, but you're going to hear from Chris and Seth. We have some interesting guests coming up. We're working on a couple of things, so keep that there. Check out Chiefs Digest. You can find our content over there. We are partnering with Matt and Chiefs Digest, and you're going to see more than we were able to do before at our site over there. So keep an eye out for that. Thank you for listening today, and we'll check in with you tomorrow.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.